is MM Development Company, DBA Planet 13 versus Trike Companies LLC. Respondent, case number 81938. If you're ready to go, Mr. Rulis, go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Justices. Before I get started, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Sure.
May it please the Court. This is a case about approved legal competition between businesses in the same industry that are simply competitors. And there's a disagreement about how that competition should go forward, but the fact is, What's a dispute, and at the heart of this case, is in fact free market approved competition. And when I say approved, what I mean is approved by the legislative history, by the executive branch, by local governments, by the Nevada legislature in the past. And so what we have is a program that involves tipping out cab drivers, rideshare drivers. Now, that is a program that has existed.
I thought we were talking about tipping out rideshare drivers, not cab drivers.
So
did I miss something?
So in the complaint, sorry, and let me be clear here. The injunction that is at issue here is specific to rideshare drivers. The claims that have been brought, although the motion for preliminary injunction initially did also request an injunction as to tipping out of cab drivers. So the claim,
that's not the issue today.
No, I'm sorry. You're correct, Your Honor. Today the issue is tipping out of rideshare drivers.
Because there seems to be a difference in the way they're regulated and how what limitations apply to which.
So I think there's some dispute.
So we don't have to get into that.
Right. There are certainly different statutory schemes that govern cab drivers versus rideshare drivers. That being said, both of those statutory schemes are cited in plaintiff's complaint and as part of the preliminary injunction motion as the basis for the relief that they're seeking. Mm-hmm. And what they're asking for is, and what they've claimed, is that what's happening is a violation of the diversion statutes, both cab drivers and rideshare. I'll focus on rideshare because, as you said, that's what the preliminary injunction is about. And so what we have is we have the allegation that MM Development, Plant 13, runs a program where they tip out rideshare drivers. This is not a program that's unique to Plant 13. It is a program that is run by a number of other marijuana dispensaries throughout the Las Vegas Valley, gentlemen's clubs, clubs, pools. At one point, there was, you know, in the appendix, you can see there was reference to attorney's offices that were offering various benefits for dropping off customers. But this is something that has been happening in Las Vegas since the 70s. Yes, it was at that time cabs and has then transitioned into, and essentially the same program applies with rideshare drivers. The program is bring a customer to a location and you get a tip for dropping off a customer at the location. The allegations in this and what was brought before Judge Crockett as part of the motion for preliminary injunction is that the program that Plant 13 runs is intended to and specifically designed to compensate diversion. Now, that is absolutely not true, nor was there any evidence submitted to Judge Crockett at the preliminary injunction hearing. But beyond that, the tip-out program that's run is absolutely privileged as free market competition. And because of that, it eliminates the that part of, so obviously we have three claims at issue in this case. We have intentional interference with perceptive economic advantage, civil conspiracy, and aiding and abetting. Now, all three of these claims essentially center around the fact that, or the claim that Plan 13's compensation program for rideshare drivers induces diversion, and specifically that Plan 13 intends to compensate for diversion. Again, no evidence at our, as part of the preliminary injunction pleadings or hearing, albeit brief, back that up. And so what we have is we simply have the evidence before the court was that Planet 13 does tip out rideshare drivers that drop off passengers at the facility.
And that's a passenger who may have had Planet 13 as their original destination gets tipped out the same as somebody who may have had a passenger intended, say, for Reef, but changed their mind and went to Planet 13. Everybody gets tipped out the same.
That is exactly correct. And beyond that, it could be for passengers that got picked up at the airport and said, you know, take me to my hotel. They put in their hotel as their destination. And as they're driving by, they see one of the cabs that has a Planet 13 advertisement. They see one of the billboards that has a Planet 13 advertisement and say, you know what, I want to go there before I go to my hotel. It's not the original destination. It's a change of destination. And that's one of the issues with Judge Crockett's decision, is that what he said was any new destination that was other than the initial one put into the rideshare app at initial time, if they changed their destination at all, that is, according to Judge Crockett, a diversion. And that is not what the statutes say. But beyond that, one of the things that the statutes that are at issue here, the diversionary statutes under the rideshare scheme, do not provide for is they do not provide for a private cause of action for a violation of those statutes. And, I think since the preliminary injunction hearing in this case, plaintiffs have tried to clarify what they're claiming and that it's the underlying wrong is, in fact, just the mere tipping out of cabs. But to be clear, the complaint and the motion for preliminary injunction when it was filed, I think very clearly stated that what they were alleging the underlying wrong, though, the wrongful conduct that caused intentional interference, the wrongful conduct that caused a conspiracy, and the wrongful conduct that caused aiding and abetting were in fact violations of those diversionary statutes. And I want to be very clear that if you go through those statutes, which is, I think it's 706 and the corresponding, it's 706A, which I believe is the rideshare, and the corresponding NAC, they are very clear on who has the capacity and who is entitled to enforce those in a civil action. And it is not private parties. There is no private right of action. Under those statutes, the enforcement of those statutes, violation of, and any civil action related to that is entrusted to and given to the Nevada Transportation Authority and the Attorney General's office. It is not given to private parties. And that's,
so is it your position that the tipping that you're referring to is legal because there's no private cause of action to bring, or is it legal because you believe the conduct itself is legal?
I believe it's, we're here because we believe the conduct itself is legal.
Okay, so with that understanding, and I understand that there's the allegation that lots of people, maybe not even an allegation, the other side may concede this, that lots of dispensaries are doing this, just like strip clubs have and whatnot. How does that conduct, however, fit within, regardless of whether it's a private cause of action, 706A320, which says the only gratuity that the driver can accept is from a passenger?
So I think it's that the it doesn't prohibit the driver. I understand where you're going, and that's it does say that it can only accept gratuities. It's not, I guess I'd say, the tip out that Planet 13 offers is different. It's a different program. Is for delivering passengers, but. It's the same sort of thing as the cab drivers.
And I understand from a business practice standpoint, probably very smart, right? Customer likes the fact that the business is providing a tip to the driver. Maybe they don't have to provide that tip. Driver always gets a tip when maybe sometimes they wouldn't get a tip from a customer. But that particular statute that we're referring to says other than gratuities offered by a passenger, a driver cannot accept any money from any other person except their company. So even though I understand there's lots of people doing it, I'm just curious factually as to how your conduct is accepted from that.
So I guess that it brings in the second part, which to be clear, I don't know that you can have one without the other. And what I mean by that is, yes, the conduct is allowed. I think the legislative history is clear that it's been contemplated and permitted and accepted and approved. But you also have the, and I don't know that you can separate the fact that there is no, even under those statutes, you can't have a private right of action that Tripe can pursue against the drivers, against Planet 13, against anybody. It's if there is a violation of that statute. And I think that's NAC, not NRS, but I, there's so many of them.
It isn't NAC. I apologize if I misspoke, but it is NAC.
But again, that goes back to still, you don't have a private right of action, and if you don't have it's entirely in the realm of the NTA and the Attorney General to pursue any civil action on those. And if Trike has a complaint about that, same sort of thing that we talked about in the motion for preliminary injunction, there is a complaint for a violation of these statutes. The correct way to pursue them is not through a lawsuit between these parties, but rather to take it to the regulator that has been vested with the authority to enforce those. The NTA, who has testified before the legislature that they are the entity that has the ability and are the ones to enforce these statutes. And so if there is a violation, they are the ones that are supposed to go do that. And so, again, if it becomes an issue of, well, the statute says they're not supposed to accept tips, if they're accepting tips and that's a violation, again, that's an issue for the regulator to handle because the regulator has said that's our job to do. Same sort of thing with diversion. I'm not here to say that diversion doesn't happen. But the reality is that when diversion happens, it's the regulator who has the power to enforce the statutes, enforce sanctions, whatever it is to deal with that. And that's what we have is we have a problem. Trike has a problem with the enforcement of the statutes, but that's not Planet 13's responsibility. That's the NTA and the Attorney General.
Well, I don't want to chew into your rebuttal time, but just quickly, if the diversion is the problem, if there's a problem with diversion, is that harm capable of being rectified by money? Do they need an injunction? This injunction here to satisfy that harm.
So no, and for two reasons. One, they absolutely have the ability to do a tip out program of their own. That's the thing. There is no tip out programs are permitted. They can do it if they want to. They choose not to. And then when they choose not to, they say that they're competing on an uneven playing field. But the reality is they could do it. They just don't want to. And secondarily, as far as the harm goes, the harm is that they might lose sales. No, that's loss of sales is completely economic. The allegations in the motion for preliminary injunction included some claims that their business reputation was being harmed, but there was no evidence of that. It was nothing but a naked conclusory allegation that was happening. And so I would say no. The proper remedy for that is economic damages, which is not irreparable harm. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Joel Schwarz on behalf of the respondent, Plaintiff Trike Companies, SONV, LLC, who I'll refer to as Trike throughout, and I'll try to be consistent referring to the appellant as Planet 13 throughout. We have and have had throughout the district court proceedings and now in the proceedings before this court a concerted effort by the appellant, by Planet 13, to try to reframe the entire case. The issues, the claims, what has been alleged and what has been proven through evidence. To be clear, Planet 13's argument here, and it's been the same argument to the district court, distilled to its essence, is we advertise that we will pay kickbacks for every rideshare passenger that is brought to Planet 13. And these are not tips, they are kickbacks. We pay kickbacks for every rideshare passenger that is brought to Planet 13. We do this via an organized program that the passengers know nothing about. So to Justice Herndon's point about how maybe the passengers like the fact that they don't have to tip because Planet 13's tipping, well, the way Planet 13 does its tipping program, the passengers don't know about it. We 1099 the rideshare drivers that we pay the kickbacks to. As of June 2019, we were put on notice by Reef, our neighbor, who we moved in next to, that this program was specifically causing diversion away from Trike's Reef Dispensary to Planet 13. We were told to stop it. We refused to stop it. We refused to modify it in any way whatsoever. But we bear no responsibility for what we're doing here. Planet 13's position is the one that doesn't have evidentiary support in the record. The district court did not abuse its discretion in entering a prohibitory injunction in this case, and there's no reason to reverse it. Planet 13 is now arguing we should apparently just have a race to the bottom.
Why the delay in seeking the injunction? File your complaint in November of 2019.
Correct.
I know there's some there's comments about COVID, but the governor didn't shut it down until March of 2020. Then we come back. Most of the information is now a year old. You know, in terms of the alleged diversion that supports, you know, this request. So how do we approach that?
And the timeline is this: we filed the complaint. We're immediately met with a motion to dismiss. We briefed the motion to dismiss. And by the time the order is entered denying the motion to dismiss, we're in March of 2020. And they then filed a motion for reconsideration, the first of, I think it's now four motions for reconsideration that have been filed in the district court. So that's the reason, is we initiate the case and spend the time briefing the motion to dismiss issue.
You could have sought an injunction right out the gate, correct? I mean, you didn't have to wait until the motion to dismiss is done to seek a preliminary injunction if irreparable harm is going to flow.
Arguably, that's correct, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. So let's be clear. We can call it tipping. We can call it whatever we want. It's kickbacks. They're kickbacks. They're not tips. Tips are you receive a service directly, and for exemplary service or for, you know, at a restaurant, the server provides me a service, and I tip. And it's understood I'm going to tip. Advertising to rideshare drivers that will pay you a bounty, it's not tipping. 1099-ing your independent contractors for doing what you've asked them to do is not tipping. This is not tipping. This is kickbacks. That's why it's advertised on an app called Kickback. So to also be very clear, and I think that Justice Herndon in particular, you understood this, Trike does not have, never has had, a claim for diversion. Its claims are for intentional interference with prospective economic advantage, civil conspiracy, and aiding and abetting. It moved for a preliminary injunction on the basis of demonstrating a reasonable likelihood of success on the merits of its claims for intentional interference and for civil conspiracy.
So what supports the second and third element of the interference of prospective advantage in the record in this case?
So specifically that they had knowledge of our prospective economic advantage and an intent to interfere with that? Why else would they have the program? The program makes no sense if all you're paying
is... I'm asking you to cite me in the record evidence that supports those two elements of this tort.
Certainly. So you have the records of the secret shopper program that was done, where 30 rides that had selected Reef as their original intended destination, mm-hmm. 20 of them were diverted. All of them all of them to Planet 13.
Well, I understand that, but what supports the conclusion that that diversion occurred by reason of anything that Planet 13 did?
Certainly.
Did you have statements from the passengers that said we were assured that we would be diverted, or we didn't choose that, they did?
Exhibits A and B to the declaration of Adam Lakin are those specific things, where we were taken to Planet 13 instead of Reef, where we had asked to go, from passengers.
So you had two passengers' affidavits, right?
Correct. And then Exhibit C, which is 1 through 20, which are transcripts or recordations of the rides that were the secret shopper program. Some of those are actually transcribed, and so you have the discussions.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
so we have a total of 23 witnesses who support this element of this tort?
Correct.
My question is, where is the irreparable harm to Trike that supports an injunction in this case?
And I understand that, Your Honor. Why
isn't this compensable? If there is a tort here, why isn't this compensable? I don't understand the reason for an injunction or the basis for an injunction.
Because, and fair enough, and I also want to clarify something that counsel said with regard to what what Judge Crockett was considering a diversion. And he was saying that any passenger that changes their mind at any time was considered a diversion. That is not, it is clear from the transcript from the preliminary injunction hearing, that is not what Judge Crockett was saying was a diversion. What Judge Crockett was saying was a diversion, and this ties to answering your question, Your Honor. This ties to what specifically was being said and is in the record as having been said in some of those rides, which is not simply, well, can I talk you into going to Planet 13?
That is the grossest level of hearsay I can think of. How is that even admissible? But that doesn't answer my question. Let's assume for the moment that it is admissible. How is that not compensable? How does that provide a basis for irreparable harm?
And Your Honor, it isn't just that. It is disparagement and providing false information about Reef that was part of some of those rides.
If true, why isn't that compensable?
Because
I'm trying to understand the basis for an injunction here. You have the burden to demonstrate, or an injunction, that you have irreparable harm.
I understand, Your Honor, and the difficulty in calculating...
You have one of the greatest lawsuits in the world with a huge amount of money to recover at some point, but I don't understand, if that's true, you don't have irreparable harm in the law, at least not under Thatcher.
Nevada courts have recognized the difficulty in calculating monetary damages to redress the loss of client relationships. For example, Excellence Community Management versus Gilmore.
Was that shown to the district court judge? I don't see that in the record. I don't see that being discussed. That there's some challenge or difficulty in your ability to be able to calculate damages here? Was there a declaration that said we don't have the ability to calculate our damages? Our reputation will be permanently destroyed?
Well, when you have drivers that are making false or defamatory statements about your business,
yes,
to people who have never been there before, that is unquestionably going to cause irreparable damages for which you cannot calculate monetary damages.
Well, I'm sorry, but... Okay, if that's what you're relying on, then that's what you're relying on.
Yes, thank you.
I'm curious, Mr. Schwartz, why, I mean, particularly since the statutes are directed at the drivers, why wasn't there any action taken against or sought to be taken against Uber, Lyft, the individual drivers themselves because I understand your position on what the evidence showed at the hearing about the second factor in terms of knowledge, particularly after you all reached out, that this was occurring, but where I struggle is with the third factor of the intent of Planet 13 to do that. Because there seems to be a lot of, the drivers are saying this is what they're doing, and we're just kind of bootstrapping it to Planet 13 gives them tips, so therefore they must have intended to do this, and they must have known about it, and they must have participated in
it. And I understand that, but I don't want to answer your question with a question, but I would say, what other reason would there be? Planet 13 is not going to have a tip program that is only designed to pay for the people that were already to come there in the first place.
Well,
that,
I mean,
that makes no economic sense.
The point, to play devil's advocate, the point in going back to what I was asking Mr. Roulis about is good business practice. It's not just in the moment. It's what does that generate word of mouth and so forth moving forward with the driver's goodwill, with customers being repeat customers because they know, hey, this place is taking care of drivers as well. I like that. That makes me feel good. I want to come here and spend my money here. So there's reasons, I think, for both of those things, just like there's a trickle-down fear on your behalf that the things the drivers are saying are going to also affect us in the future and our business at Reef. But I don't know that that automatically translates into finding intent just because, well, why else would they do it?
If there was an alternative intent, goodwill with the drivers, for example, that would be evidence that would have been, at that time, within Trike's exclusive possession. It was not provided.
But whose burden is it, particularly when they have 3 days' notice to be able to scramble all this together, right?
But I would note, on that point, Your Honor, they didn't ask for more time. They didn't ask for an evidentiary hearing. A lot of their procedural complaints that are set forth in their brief, they're things that they didn't raise until after they had lost.
Understood.
One of the challenges of the record on which this case comes to us, the only reference I see in the district court's order is paragraph 19 relating to NRS 706A, 280C, 2C, A and B, and NAC 706-5521, which are provisions that relate to taxicab drivers rather than rideshare drivers. So I don't know where in this order the district court relied on any provisions that relate to rideshare drivers. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, that the way that that is worded is inartful.
Well, okay. But here's the thing. In reviewing what the district court judge's order is saying, are we to assess the district court's approach here as an evaluation of two torts and whether those two torts have been demonstrated through the record made? Or are we supposed to consider regulations and statutes that weren't cited by the judge and don't appear to have been litigated that seem to apply to drivers and not to the defendant?
And I would say it's the former, Your Honor. It is the two torts that are okay. The claims that.
So that's why I wanted to come back to my question. I don't think any of these regulations are appropriate for consideration at this stage because it doesn't look like the judge relied on them, or if he did, it was the wrong ones, and it doesn't look like they were argued. So it looks like regulations that apply to drivers and rideshare people don't apply to Planet 13 yet.
I would agree with that in part, but I would contend, Your Honor, that if you are incentivizing rideshare drivers to violate their regulatory obligations, you're dangling the carrot and saying, we'll pay you if you do that.
That takes me back to the point I'm asking earlier about the injunction. All that's in front of us today is the injunction. And I understand your point. I understand your client's concern. But here, that seems compensable. There hasn't been a showing that you're unable to calculate damages. It's just the two torts, as you just acknowledged, that are the basis for this injunction, not these driver regulations and how they're interpreted or whether they even apply to Planet 13. So assuming that we're just focused on the torts, why is there irreparable harm?
And I would say it's twofold. One, they are deputizing the rideshare drivers to defame and provide false information, which is never going to be fully calculable.
First, I thought one was going to say, well, the reason we want to look at these driver regulations is because that is a statute that sets a standard of conduct that supports the argument that this conduct is illegal or improper. But if you throw those regulations out, even though this may create all kinds of problems for your client, what's illegal about it? What is it that's illegal about them paying a driver? Not the driver's acceptance or the passenger's willingness to allow that to occur. They're paying it. What's illegal about that?
It doesn't have to be illegal to be intentional interference or a conspiracy.
Right.
It doesn't have to be illegal. It just has to be wrongful designed to harm.
But they have a bunch of records. They have a bunch of records showing that they've paid this. Seems to me that those are adequate resources to be able to demonstrate your damages, right?
But if you lose the customer on the front end and you never get them back because they think that they shouldn't set foot in your property because it's bad because somebody told them that, you'll never be able to calculate the amount of damages that results from that.
Okay. Any other questions?
May I follow up?
Yes,
huh? Look, we asked the gentleman a lot of questions, and I know my question in part had a lot of parts to it, so it was a little unfair to hold you to try and go through and answer all of them. But I am still curious about, I mean, you've alleged a civil conspiracy claim on a statute that arguably for today is maybe doesn't provide a private cause of action, but you didn't seek action against the other alleged conspirators to that, meaning the drivers and or their companies, and I was curious as to why.
Because until you have fully conducted discovery in your case, you don't know who the drivers are.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you the flip side of the question.
Sure.
Isn't paying the customers of somebody else to avoid their store unfair competition?
It's not paying them to avoid.
Forgetting the drivers' regulations. I don't even think they count in this discussion yet. That's my view.
Sure.
Aren't you engaged? Isn't your client engaged in unfair competition?
No.
And if not, why not?
No, because one, it's a practice that is available to everyone. Every dispensary in the Las Vegas Valley in Nevada can do the exact same thing. As a matter of fact, many of
them. Where in the record is that shown, counsel?
So in the brief, the opposition to the motion preliminary injunction.
That's not evidence. Is there any evidence? Is there a declaration, an affidavit, a witness's statement that says that this practice of paying rideshare drivers is a custom and practice among all of the dispensaries in Clark County?
That specific comment, no. But
anything close to it?
Not in an affidavit, but if you go to, and if we're going to talk about what was relied on by the district court, even within plaintiff's documents that they submitted to the court in support of their motion for preliminary injunction, are these specifics that Acres, Pizos, The Grove, MedMen, all these other dispensaries are doing the same thing. They're offering tip outs or dropping off customers at their place. And by the way, one thing I want to correct that Mr. Schwartz said, and I think it was just a slip, there's only one affidavit that was submitted in support of the motion for preliminary injunction. Now, we submitted a declaration in support of our motion for reconsideration when we had time to compile our evidence, at least a little bit. But there was one affidavit, and that was by Mr. Adam Lakin, who is the, I think he's the CMO of Trike. And essentially it was, I heard this. Somebody told me that. It was not personal knowledge. It was, here's all these other things that is, as you said, Your Honor, I think is gross hearsay. And that was all that was submitted. There was not personal testimony from all of these other people. And by the way, I believe that they absolutely had access to them because many of them were employees of Reef that did the secret shopper study. And one thing that came up there at the very end about knowing the drivers, in the documents that they submitted in support of their motion for preliminary injunction, it identified names of some of the drivers. So they had information about some of the drivers. They could have. And that was one of the issues that we brought up on a motion to dismiss, is that the drivers are not here. And we're trying to be held responsible for things that Planet 13 didn't know anything about and that the drivers are doing on their own. And then as far as one of the things that Justice Stiglitz brought up, which was being – compensable, like Justice Hardesty, you were talking about it too, is 1099s. Mr. Schwartz mentioned the 1099s. That is absolutely, if you want to talk about being able to categorize, define, calculate damages, 1099s is going to tell you exactly how many passengers and what was tipped out. That's going to be able to calculate and put damages into a clear number. There is not a difficulty to calculate the damages here.
Well, what's your response to counsel's argument that there is an injury to their business's reputation?
So they keep saying
by unfair competition.
Sure. So they keep saying that the drivers are defaming and offering false statements. Nowhere in any of the evidence that was submitted as part of this motion for preliminary injunction or reply did they identify a single statement that was in fact false, or why it was false, or why it was injurious. They simply stated they're saying bad things about us, and that is compensable, or that we can't then calculate our damages. But the reality is they're trying to hold Planet 13 liable for statements made by drivers that they claim are defamatory, but are in fact opinion statements. And so somehow Planet 13 is on the hook for statements that they wouldn't even be able to go after the drivers for. They're protected as First Amendment opinions, and it's, you know, they haven't identified.
Are you acknowledging that the drivers are your agents for purposes of making statements on your client's behalf?
Absolutely not.
Oh, okay, I just was wondering why we're worried about the drivers' First Amendment rights.
No, but
any other questions for counsel?
No.
Okay, thank you very much for your arguments today.